And I have a question in terms of owning the street
and
the challenges with the police brutality, because that's what we've heard a lot about here, is what people were facing. So I guess how were people organizing so they were inspired to fight back against the police instead of succumbing to fear and staying away from the streets?
Well, it's really interesting because I would say that as the state repression increased, the anger against the state increased. But I don't think that was the basis of the mobilization. The mobilization had already reached, I think, the largest it could be, like by the end of March. Like, we had hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. But at that point, the state repression hadn't become severe. But it was after that, when the police brutality started taking place, that I think popular support started deepening. But there was already a critical, like, significant mass of people on the streets and on strike. So I guess I'm saying that because I don't want to give the impression that the response or the anger of the police or state repression formed the foundation of why people were there. Like, people were already mobilized quite a bit when the state violence started really taking place. But I would also say that it was really interesting because there's different types of actions happening, right? There was massive family-friendly protests, which were essential to what happened, I think. There was also very creative direct actions that were taking place. So the state repression, a lot of it that you saw was around those actions. And around also very imaginative protests, like, for example, the night demonstrations. But when we talked about combative unionism, one of the things that came up was the idea of economic disruption, because the government wasn't negotiating with the students or with any representative of popular movements in a meaningful way. So there was a vote within the ASSE to endorse a week of direct actions and economic disruption. And that was actually supported by the Montreal Council of the CSN, which is a union federation in Quebec, so that was significant. And most of the direct actions were organized by autonomous groups that included students and non-students. But the students supported those direct actions. So that included things like blockading the Montreal World Trade Center, which is like a, you know, obviously, I think you understand what it is. It's like a place where corporations do dirty business, basically. You know, and you had basically students blockading the doors. And you know, the response was incredibly violent. But also the response was violent when the first night protests started happening. You know, and I think it was mainly because the state couldn't handle the fact that these very almost autonomous protests were happening en masse and autonomously and in this sort of very inspiring way. So there was this very clear attempt to shut those down at the beginning, and it backfired. But, you know, those are a few thoughts. I think that, you know, the question now is accountability. You know, I had this debate with somebody the other day at a forum that happened in Montreal, and, you know, I said something like, Charé should be behind bars, you know, but I wasn't saying it to be, like, bombastic. I was saying it to be, like, accurate, because I think, like, there should be a legal process, like, in terms of, like, certain mechanisms of state power, Jean Charest was responsible for them, right? And so if we talk about the Liberal Party Congress that happened in Victoriaville, it's a small town outside of Quebec, and the amount of violence that the Quebec police force was using, which I was there, I saw it, it was crazy. I mean, people's jaws were, like it looked like a bullet. I mean, it was rubber bullets, but, like the entire jaw was destroyed. You know, and Maxine, his eye, he lost his eye, it's forever. You know, a few different people I know, their ribs were broken. You know, the level of toxic gas used, you know. So I think people didn't get scared. I mean, back to your question, because there was this feeling of solidarity, and there was also a very clear demand that people were mobilizing around, and also this idea that this government in Quebec was trying to undercut and unwrite so much of what people had fought for in Quebec the generation before.
We've had thousands of people showing up for popular demonstrations against war that we, the 80s and 90s, and it seems like a lot of that has fallen away. I don't know what you could possibly suggest if it could do it, act as a catalyst. I'm trying to wrap my head around why it seems to be so difficult to.
It's a huge question. I don't have any answers. I have ideas, like we all do, I think that right now, the thing to think about in terms of the organization in Quebec is that you have representative democratic structures that date a few decades, right? So that's, and that are actually based on representing a very specific segment of society. So that's students. But then you have institutions also like the Housing Rights Federation, which is a national, Quebec national network of housing rights groups that fight for social housing and for housing rights and against gentrification. They have locals in every neighborhood around Montreal and also outside of Montreal. So that's the FRAPU. So you have these structures. In terms of I think one thing that is essential to the background of these institutions is that they're revolutionary. Right, in the sense that I'm not saying that to be cheesy or whatever. I'm just saying that, in essence, and what I mean by that is that they are their structures, their institutions. They have people who are surviving, working at them, there's staff, and that's all important. But I think they leave the door open to reimagine a different future. Right, they're not invested entirely on sustaining the sort of the structures of power and authority as they exist today, mainly because they are rooted in a historical struggle of Quebec, right? But in terms of the spirit of them, I think that translates anywhere, which is sort of the spirit of that expression of demanding the impossible, right? That idea that we don't know where this is going, right? People didn't know where the strike was going. It was sort of this process, right? And people communicated and participated in that process. And that process just sort of created beautiful things that were unimaginable, right? Like this artwork, right? And neighborhood committees, right? But I think that idea of openness and that spirit of openness is so essential. So I think it's a very challenging balance to think about of very organized representative structures that are revolutionary and open to very creative and diverse tactics, right? So it's very it sort of has both sort of union structure and also anarchist theory, and in the sense of it being having an open spirit, not being boxed into being a very specific thing in society, if you know what I mean. None of these institutions, if we're talking about ASSE, they don't want to be part of the government, right? They want to reimagine what the state looks like, right? And there was a very interesting discussion on Radio Canada in French of Bernard Landry, who used to be the premier of Quebec, and he was talking about the ASSE, and he said in the interview, he was giving advice to Jean Charest, through the interview. He was saying, if I was in power, I'd do this. He was saying, basically, if I was in power, I would negotiate with the ASSE because they are an anarcho-syndicalist federation of student unions who don't believe in the market system and the market system and state power as we understand it today. And, he's right. It's true. Right, so I don't want to say all these things to be I'm not saying they have all the answers are there in terms of ASSE, but I think the spirit of that process is what's important to think about in terms of how we do things, in terms of how we organize to confront the conservatives, because that's the whole game, right? Because I think a huge part of the game is that belief of the impossibility of the odds.
There's right? Cynicism.
Yeah, the cynicism.
To riff off what you were just saying, I think two things that I came... I grew up in Winnipeg and I lived in Quebec for 13 years and I was a striking student during the strike at Concordia. And I think there's two things that were really, really key for me that I took away from it. One was possibility and impossibility. That almost every day there was another thing happening that I didn't think was possible, and then it happened. And then it happened 20 times. And then another 20 things happened the next day. And I didn't even know what to do. I was, people talked about a collective sense of like ecstasy, like an ecstatic feeling. And I think within that realm of impossibility, being kind of completely opened up, like you were saying, like there was a really, like the openness was kind of overwhelming. And people felt to that openness that they had direct access, I think. And so you had neighborhood committees forming, which were neighborhood-based and included a lot of older people, a lot of people with disabilities, a lot of families. I went on one march in my neighborhood, just in my neighborhood alone, of like 15,000 people that lasted 6 hours one evening, with families running out of their homes to join us and then going back home to bed, kids in their pajamas. I didn't think I'd ever be marching with all of the people in my neighborhood, almost all of them. Like, I don't even know how many tens of thousands of people live in my neighborhood. So there was a sense of possibility and also a sense of empowerment. And I feel like I don't use that word very often, but people felt extremely empowered to do what they needed to do, and that what they would do was connected to the larger movement in whatever way that was. And I think that happened through creativity. I think that happened through the arts, and I think in Quebec society in general, in terms of the culture being different than here and knowing the culture here as well, that art is so integrated into Quebec culture, there is no question about whether it's valuable or not, it's just in the culture and it's valuable, that a lot of artists like the Ecole de Montaigne du Rouge were actually producing critique and analysis and bringing that back into new protests and street art and t-shirts and whatever, and memes on the internet daily. And so a whole bunch of different kinds of artists were articulating these things and really, really acute, articulate analysis, so that was visual. And I remember we were just commenting on the Idle Noir protest here, the one that happened at Portage Place. And, you know, I know that what you're saying about, you know, the movement's kind of dwindling here, it feels like it's different than the 80s and 90s, but when I saw that video of the Portage Place ground dance, I don't know, more action, I didn't think that would be possible. I didn't think people would say, you know what, this mall is ours, because malls are cultural and community spaces here. There are spaces where people gather and hang out and take up space, and it's a place to be in the winter. There are community spaces here that I think they aren't in a lot of other places. Anyways, I won't go on too much, but in the ground dance and the I don't know more action at Portage in Maine was incredible, like to see from far away. I haven't been here for the movement, I have no idea what's going on, but I know that it seems like the same thing, where people feel they have access and they're empowered and they have the right to be there and take up space. So it seems like that is happening here in some ways. And yeah,
I mean, I think, yeah, in regards to Idle No More, Edmund's here, who's been walking for many weeks now. So Thanks for being here. I think, you know, in terms of understanding the, you know, where we're at in Canada, I actually think, like, let's be very honest, Quebec is a nationalist society. Like, there's a significant portion of Quebec society that believes, well, it's not even a political belief at this point, it's just, I think, culturally speaking, there's this understanding that Quebec is separate. And that expresses itself politically. But I don't think that that is defined in a definite sense of, like, this Quebec society is going to be separate and it's going to be this way. But there are certain values that are attached to that, right? Which are around, like, the idea of, like, very strong public institutions, Quebec-based institutions. The reason I mention that is that largely the most problematic aspect that I think needs to be addressed around Quebec nationalism is the colonial nature of Quebec society, right? And the fact that Quebec society, like Canadian society, is a colonial society based on genocide. So I think that actually the challenge, and I think actually a point of unity in terms of understanding possibilities, how to work together between Quebec and Canada, one of the points that brings Quebec and Canada together is our collective imagination of what a society that actually addresses that sort of fundamental to injustice as to where we live, like the colonial injustice of where we live, right? Like, how can we reimagine society as a just society, right? And I think that that question needs to be addressed in Quebec like it needs to be addressed in Canada. Now, I mean, obviously these things are like huge questions. I'm not saying it's simple, but I'm saying that that's actually, I think, a point of unity between Quebec and Canada, because Canada's economy is based on natural resources largely, increasingly. Obviously, there's other things, right? Those natural resources are based on, we get it, right? They're based on the exploitation of Indigenous lands, largely without meaningful consent. That's the basis of the economy. That's the basis of the conservative power, right? So if we're going to reimagine society, right, the fundamental point is the land, right? And if we're going to address and reimagine our relationship to the land, that reimagination has to start through supporting and participating in Indigenous struggles, right? That's sort of like the bedrock of anything we do. And I think that that's common to Quebec and Canada.
I'm from Quebec, and I was involved in a student association during during the spring of 2012. And then you probably know, like me, even though what happened in the streets of Montreal during that spring was a great moment for politics and social change, it was not the majority of students who were involved in that movement. I remember organizing assemblies before voting strike, and having only 500 students on 6,000 who came to the assembly because they were waiting for the internet vote to vote no to the strike. And I remember discussing with other students and with people in general from the right wing, and they were usually using very, very basic arguments such as the tuition fees are higher in the rest of Canada. And what I want to ask you is, why do you think so many people refuse to have that debate, including the government itself? And how could we have involved more people in that debate?
I think if we think about a number of colleges that are central in Montreal, if we talk about Cégep Saint-Laurent, if we talk about Cégep Vieux-Montréal, if we talk about Cégep Maisonneuve, if we talk about Cégep Marie-Victorin, if we talk about University of Montréal de Québec, if we talk about, you know, many departments within the University of Montréal, the majority of all those students voted for the strike. Which university you studied at?
Then I studied at the Cégep de Saint-Foy in Quebec City.
Quebec City, okay. I'm just mentioning those Cégeps because there were Cégeps where the majority of people were on strike, and they're like major Cégeps, like Cégep Maisonneuve. It's a huge Cégep. I think it's 30,000 students. It's either 20 or 30,000, but it's a significant school. Cégep Saint-Laurent also is huge, relatively. So I think that I could say that it's the first time I've ever seen a popular mobilization based on protest that actually engaged the majority of society. I do think that's accurate to say. Whether some people didn't support the strike, but the majority of people were debating the strike, right? The strike occupied the centerpiece of the entirety of political culture in Quebec for a year. That was like the center of debate. And the important thing about this was that the terms of the debate were being set by people on the streets. Now, the government refused to negotiate, but the movement, I think that the center of energy was people who were engaging in protest and in assemblies. Your question is a good one in terms of, like, how do you engage more people? I think that the amount of people engaged in Quebec during the strike is something that is totally unparalleled in North America in the last 15 years. So I think that is significant. I mean, these are the largest demonstrations, I think, some of them in Quebec and Canadian history. Now, in terms of other ways to engage other people, my biggest concern during the strike, I'll be honest with you, was how do we engage other sectors in a structural way? So if we're talking about organized labor, that was like a huge concern. How do you involve structurally organized labor, right? Because I'll give the example of the CSN, the union. They actually had a social strike mandate that was voted in their General Assembly for almost the whole period of the strike. They had a mandate from their members to join a social strike, and the executive never enforced that mandate, right? So there's some great people in the CSN, and in many ways were supportive of the student union, but they weren't able to make that leap. And mainly they weren't able to make that leap because they were scared of losing the cash in their bank account, right? Like, and saving the institution, right? And I think that's not a totally, I mean, that's a legitimate concern, right? But I think the question was at that point, how much more could have the movement advanced in April or May of 2012 if the CSN would have stepped up and supported the students? I think that we could have gotten to a whole nother level if the unions would have engaged structurally. Of course, tons of union members were going to things, but I'm saying as structures in society. For me, that's the biggest concern. There wasn't enough structural work done, like at an organizational level, between workers' associations and the students' unions in the lead up to the strike. But I'm not saying what happened was incredible, but if that would have happened more significantly on an institutional level, I don't know what would have happened in Quebec, like in terms of like thinking beyond what happened in 2012, even though, you know, as Candace was talking about, that sense of wonderment that, you know, most on the left were feeling is very real. But if the unions would have gotten involved, I think I can't even imagine what would have happened.
Go ahead. Yeah. Please.
Good evening. My name is Edmund. I'm a gentleman who's walking across Canada to work people. He walked into where I don't want. This walk is for people. And I heard you talk about I don't want. But I don't know more is not part of me. I don't know more is just a phrase. And from where I'm coming from is that I was in Ottawa with Jason Spence for a hunger strike for 40 days. I seen it all. I witnessed it all from my leadership. From the ones who were against the conservatives who say we stand with us today. But we are walking along the highway. There's no leaders walking with us. So now I'm standing here today by myself because my people who believe in me, who I am, are walking today with me. Now the question I have for you is, what is it you guys need? Or what it is you guys protest? What is it you want? You want it for a place of a profession or a place of natural way of life? Where I'm speaking from as a man, not as a professional. I don't have a job title. My job title today is what I'm doing, walking toward people. For us natives, we see today in those rallies our families just supporting us. You said you had 15,000 people. Why doesn't those 15,000 people you talk about in these pictures, where are they today with us in the individuals? Where are they? I ask you, all of my heart, you know, there's only 12 of us who are walking today, but we're not going to support from the people. And what's happening today is your treaties, not just a Native issue. It's everybody's issue here today, sitting here. You guys come here and talk about water, talk about education, talk about healthcare. That's part of treaties. Treaties represent four races of this world. Pardon my language, but I don't mean disrespect when I say the white people, the Native people, the colored people, and the Chinese people. That's what's expected to be. So, back to that question, what is it you guys need, or what is it you want? From that professional side of life, or the natural side of life, you standing there, maybe your father, maybe your husband, maybe your...
I understand.
But what I'm trying to create for Canada is how we were before treaties. We took care, we shared our medicines, we shared our water, we shared our land. We did this all. But where is it today? That's important. You talk about pride no more. The Native issues, where is it today? So many people walking to that building in Ottawa. For me, I choose to walk away from that building to protect this water, where that water comes from the mountains. So maybe you can understand my question, where I'm coming from. But I apologize if I took up the time of each one of you standing here today, sitting here. But please understand where I'm coming from as a human being. Just like you. Doesn't matter what's color. I walk through that door, and I walk through that door too with you guys as one. Not as individuals who come from different backgrounds, but individuals who come here. Why we're sitting here today as human beings. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. I think that one of the main things that's being addressed or that was articulated on the streets of Quebec was, what do people want? You know, you're asking the question. I think people want a different society. They want, in essence, if we're talking about the injustice of the market system, of the money-driven system, I think people want a system that is free from colonial capitalism. I mean, I think that if we're talking about the essence of why people were motivated in that way to be on the streets like that, they were imagining a different society. That's what it was about. It was about a tuition, but it was an opportunity for people to dream much larger. Now, the question you're saying about where people are at today, I hear you. I think mainly a lot of people are recovering, just in the sense that, like, you know, a lot of the students were striking for many months and spent a lot of their savings and are dealing now with a lot of legal cases, and also dealing with society as it stands, you know? And so it's sort of like the recovery mode right now. That's sort of what's happening. In terms of Idle No More in Quebec, and let's say more broadly Indigenous struggles in Quebec, I think that that's... for the first time, I saw student unions and federations starting to address that point, which was very, very important. It's only the beginning. It needs to actually be central to what's happening, but it's starting. But thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm from Quebec too, and I have a few comments, right? At the beginning, I was all thinking that the strike was like during just 6 weeks, like after the 22nd of March, like the end of the strike negotiation. And it was like for 6 months, it was just like crazy. And I think a lot of your thought is about how to generalize the strike. And I'm from France originally. When I was younger, there was a lot of strike, like every year. And there was a big strike in 2006, where it was a student strike, but we ended up with a worker who joined the strike, and we had like two demos of 3 million people. Because in France, it's possible to go on strike when you're a worker, even when it's not just for you,
your issue or your workplace.
Yeah, here you have the right to be on strike, but just on specific matter and specific time. So it's a big problem. And I think that we found some way to generalize this strike with the night demonstration, but like a second time where like, when it began, it was just like that, you know, it was like really like not in a good mood. And after like when the night demo came, it was like really like happy and strong. And after there was a third time with the, when the special law came and there was the Kasparov demonstration. We don't talk a lot about that, but like the other people in that neighborhood like demonstrate together, and that was crazy because it was meaning like we are okay to be against the law and we want to be against this law because this law is not good. And it was one of the first time I saw like Quebecers doing that, to be honest. Like Quebecers love the legality and don't do that usually. So I think it was big. But to finish, I want to speak about like what is happening now, because like we're in a, I think, an hopeful position, because our three big political parties are on the right, and even if the power party is now the PQ, putting power in the new government, they're like a really rightish politics. And there is a lot of repression outside. So just like demonstrate is illegal, it's kind of illegal. They arrested like the same number of people in 2 months now than in all the spring, the rebel spring. So yeah, it's hard now, like it's the spring of repression. So yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really agree with the way you talk about the strike, and I just want to add a couple of quick things. I think one is to say that what happened in Quebec and those cracks with the light shining in is something that's also happening in other parts of the world. I think we can say the same thing about Turkey, we can say the same thing about Greece with the occupation of the public broadcaster that's happening right now after the right-wing government tried to close it. People have poured out wanting to support that, and in other places too. And the reason for that is because the crisis is global. That the attempt to raise the tuition fees in Quebec wasn't just about something specific to Quebec, it was part of the international austerity drive that you refer to, and that is something we're experiencing here as well. Then the drive to, you know, have more corporate incursions on Indigenous lands in Canada is part of that same international situation, right? Because the global economy has not recovered from the crisis that began in 2008, and corporations are looking for new ways to boost profits and try to push the market further and further into people's lives. So I think, you know, it's not going to, when that kind of stuff really hits the fan in Manitoba, it's not going to look the same as it did in Quebec, because this is the same society, it doesn't have the same history. But it doesn't mean that we're somehow outside what's going on in the global economy, right? And those same pressures that led to what happened in Quebec and have led to things breaking out in other parts of the world will affect us here sooner or later. And just the last thing, I really think the way you talked about the things that made the movement possible are really important. And for us here, I think to try to find ways to plant little seeds of community organizing, of independent labor organizing, of other kinds of ways of responding to the crises that people are experiencing in their everyday lives, that's where we're going to create new possibilities. But that means in Manitoba, we need to think long term, because there's not a movement that's about to burst out, but it takes years and years of work and organizing, beginning to address the things that people are experiencing in ways that build their collective power. Build, you know, not just rely on the government or some social service agency or advocate to do something for you. Try to build the power to take action yourself, with your coworkers, with your neighbors, and so on. And I think it's by planting those kinds of seeds that we help to create new possibilities. But we shouldn't think about it as trying to copy what happened.
Exactly. But that's one thing I love about Winnipeg, is Winnipeg's not trying to be anything else than Winnipeg, and Winnipeg's awesome. You know, like you go to Toronto and you feel like it's trying to be New York City or something, you know. And this is sort of, you know, just jamming. But I agree with the last two points deeply, and that's all I'll say. I agree with the spring of repression and the importance of understanding what's happening. And I agree about, like, everything that was just said. So I just want to thank the Council of Canadians for organizing this event. I believe there's an activist from Winnipeg who's going to talk about a student initiative now. So I'd like to say thank you to my friend Rebecca for introducing me. I really appreciate it. And also the booklet's here, so it's just $5. We printed the covers by hand, and it's called La Fond de l'Air est Rouge, so it's meaning the essence of the air is red. And thanks for being here.